Today's reading is coming from Acts chapter 2, 1 to 13. And I'll be starting to read from verse 1. When the day of Pentecost came, they were all together in one place. Suddenly a sound like the blowing of a violent wind came from heaven and filled the whole house where they were sitting. They saw what seemed to be tongues of fire that separated and came to rest on each of them. All of them were filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak in other tongues, as the Spirit enabled them. Now there were staying in Jerusalem God-fearing Jews from every nation under heaven. When they heard the sound, a crowd came together in bewilderment because each one heard them speaking in his own language. Utterly amazed, they asked, "Are not these men who are speaking Galileans? Then how is it that each of us hears them in his own native language? Parthians, Medes, Elamites, residents of Mesopotamia, Judea, Cappadocia, Pontus, and Asia, Phrygia and Pamphylia, Egypt, and the parts of Libya near Cyrene, visitors from Rome, both Jews and converts to Judaism, Cretans and Arabs. We hear them declaring the wonders of God in their own tongues." Amazed and perplexed, they asked one another, "What does this mean?" Some, however, made fun of them and said, "They have had too much wine." This is the word of the Lord.
Good morning. Wonderful to be here today. Thank you so much for inviting me. And I couldn't come here without mentioning Johnny Patterson, who is a key part of our team at CSW. I lost track of time, but it must have been two years ago. Anyway, roughly 18 months ago. Johnny was really part of our team and a key part. And I guess it's out of that relationship that I'm here speaking this morning. And I really appreciate the opportunity to be with you. And it's always great to speak on Pentecost Sunday, because I'm actually a Pentecostal. And I don't tell everybody that, but I am, and it's also interesting because when we started CSW nearly 39 years ago, I started it as a Pentecostal. I started it with a Roman Catholic MP, and the other MP that started it with us was the president of the World Orange Order, who was an Ulster Unionist. So as you can realise, we never discussed theology, otherwise CSW wouldn't be in existence today. But no, it's always great to speak on Pentecost Sunday. And you know, it's persecution. I just want to check the time when I start so that I. Persecution has been around almost since the beginning of time. If you go into the Old Testament, of course, they weren't Christians we were talking about then, but men and women of faith, people like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Daniel, and those kind of people. If you read Hebrews chapter 11, that's a great chapter to read. It talks about the heroes of our faith. It talks about people, some people that were delivered from persecution, like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and others that weren't. It actually talks about in Hebrews 11, it talks about people that were tortured, that were martyred. It talks about people that were sawn in two, which doesn't sound very nice, but that was people that were beheaded for their faith, and that still is happening today. And then, of course, when the church started on this day all those years ago, then persecution started too. And Paul told Timothy that if you want to live a godly life in Christ Jesus, then he says, you will be persecuted. That's quite an amazing statement, but I guess it's something we all sign up to, but we sign up to it in the hope that actually it won't apply to us. It's one of those promises, because that's a promise, Paul said there, that if you want to live a godly life in Christ Jesus, you'll be persecuted. So I guess it's one of those promises that we hope actually doesn't apply to us, and it's not one of those promises that we often talk about, but it is a fact. Although we don't see much of it here in this country. Nevertheless, it wasn't long after the early church started on the day of Pentecost before Peter and John were put in prison because for preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so, and persecution has carried on through the years. And in fact, in the 20th century, more Christians were persecuted their faith than all of the other centuries put together. There is actually a good reason for that, and the good reason is because the church is bigger than it's ever been before. We sometimes, when we talk about the increase of persecution, we lose sight of the fact that actually the increase is because the church is increasing. Jesus Christ said, I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And so the church grows. The church grows in countries actually where persecution is at its highest sometimes. The two fastest growing churches in the world. Does anybody know where the two fastest growing churches are in the world? Johnny, you can't answer. China, yeah. China, where there is probably around 130 million Christians, and that's growing. They say there'll be a quarter of a billion by 2030. Incredible, and yet there's great persecution. But that's not quite the fastest. Anybody know which is the fastest growing? Iran, yeah, absolutely. Iran, an Islamic country, a country that is a theocracy, where Christians are persecuted very badly. They're also coming to faith in Christ in amazing numbers. And we hear stories of whole villages of Muslims going to bed and having a dream, and the next morning sharing with their neighbours the dream they've had. It's a dream of Jesus, and they've all had in the whole village, and they've had these dreams. That's happened several times in Iran and in other places too. But the church is growing, and so persecution very often brings growth to the church, and so. Persecution has been around for a long while. Actually, today, in 2000, well, the latest figures that we had were for 2016 by the Pew Foundation, and they say that 79% of the world's population, nearly 80% of the world's population, live in countries with high or very high restrictions on religious freedom. That's staggering, isn't it? But that includes other faiths too. It doesn't just include Christians. But according to the International Society of Human Rights, who are a secular organisation, they say that about 80% of persecution of people of faith is against Christians. And so Christianity is the most persecuted faith. So just let me tell you very briefly what we at CSW do. We are an advocacy organisation. We're not involved in aid. We are an advocacy organisation, which means that we speak out. Proverbs 31 tells us that we are to speak out for those who are unable to speak for themselves. And so that's what we try to do. And we do that by visiting countries. We produce reports, which we use those to raise awareness in Parliament, at the EU, at the United Nations, where we have status, and also on Capitol Hill and other places too. We raise awareness of the information that we've got, And the information that we have, if you go onto our website, which is csw.org.uk, or if you pick up any of the leaflets I brought with me on a table at the back, which please do, you can guarantee that what you read is accurate. Now, this is really important to us. When we're writing reports and sending them to governments, it's very important that we get it right. And so we don't publish anything unless we have three separate sources for the information that we're putting out, so that we don't get it wrong, because it's very easy. It's very easy to, you hear rumours and you hear even stories that are put out in the Christian press sometimes are wrong. And so we're always very, very careful to make sure that we've got it accurately. So that's what we do. We raise awareness. And I have to say, you know, there is more awareness in political circles in the world today, I believe, than at any time in the last 40 years since I've been doing this work. There almost every week there is either a question or a debate in Parliament on religious freedom. And also throughout the world, there is now an international panel of parliamentarians for freedom of religion or belief. That's incredible. Around the world, parliamentarians were speaking up on these issues. This coming week, I'm not sure if it's Tuesday or Wednesday of this week, there is a debate in our parliament on the persecution. Usually it's about religious freedom, but this week it's on the persecution of Christians specifically. And that's happening this week in our parliament. So awareness is being raised, and what we need to pray is that awareness is not enough in itself. We need to pray that that will turn into action, that we try to get our Foreign Office to include freedom of religion or belief in foreign policy. And quite successfully, the current minister, Lord Ahmed, who is in charge of human rights in the Foreign Office, has put freedom of religion and belief right at the top of his priorities, which is an amazing answer to prayer. So where is persecution happening in the world today? I'm just going to tell you very briefly two countries that I've visited in the last year, and then I want to tell you a little bit about a latest report we've done, and then I'll tell you what you can do, because we need to act on what we hear. So last August, I visited Iraq for the first time. I'd never been to Iraq. A friend of mine, a congressman from America, who actually had traveled with me on my very, very first trip ever to a country of persecution in 1985, to Romania. Congressman Frank Wolf, who came with me on that trip, and he was quite useful because he stopped me being deported after I was arrested, but that was a long while ago. And he called me and he said, "Would you like to come to Iraq with me?" I must admit, my first thought was not particularly thank you, but I'd never been. And the reason we went was because there are 10 years ago, there were something like 2 million Christians in Iraq, and today there are only between 150 and 200,000 Christians. Christianity has been decimated. Many have been killed. Many have left the country. Many have been displaced. And so we went to see if there was anything that we could do to encourage Christians to stay in the area. So we flew out to Erbil, and we went to Mosul, and Mosul had literally been liberated from ISIS just the week before we were there. And so we were able to go in and we were able to see what was happening there, see some terrible sights, meet some people who had the most harrowing stories. I'm not going to tell you an awful lot about the rest of the trip, but I will tell you about one lady that I met, a young girl. She was maybe around 30 years of age, and she had lived in a Christian village on the outskirts of Mosul, and and remember that these places in northern Iraq are real Bible lands. This is where Abraham lived. It's where, in fact, in Mosul itself is the tomb of Seth, Adam's son. Cain, Abel, and Seth is buried there in Mosul. This is real Bible heartlands. But so I met this girl called Mariam, and she told me that when ISIS came into Mosul, she was taken by ISIS, and then she told me what had happened over the subsequent 3 years, and it was horrific. She had been taken and she'd been trafficked and owned by 22 different men in 3 years. She had been trafficked 16 times inside Mosul and then taken to Raqqa in Syria and was trafficked another 5 times before she eventually escaped with some groups that were working with there's a sort of underground railroad there trying to actually help these ladies escape. You know, 6,000 Yazidi women were taken from Sinjar, and we visited Sinjar and met some of their people too, and only 3,000 of those have ever been rescued. There's still 3,000 missing, and many Christian women too. She had been trafficked 22 times. She tried to escape from every single man. She knew the name of every man that had held her, that had owned her. She, at one point, she was tied to a post in the street for sale, and men would come by and lift her clothing to see what they were purchasing. What a terrible, terrible life for 3 years. But the worst thing was that when she eventually escaped, she came to her home and her family and her church, the Assyrian Orthodox Church, disowned her because she'd brought shame on them by what had happened to her. You know, Mariam, I tell you her story this morning so you can pray for her. She doesn't know where to turn. She wants to leave the country. She's in fear. She lives in a little flat by herself. She's in fear of anyone, Muslims and her own Christian families. It's a terrible position to be in. And please do pray for Mariam. But she represents literally hundreds and probably thousands of other women like her. The second country I want to tell you about where I visited in October of last year, and I visited northern Nigeria. And Nigeria, if you don't know, is a country that is sort of half Christian and half Muslim, about 50% of both. In the south, it's mainly Christian with some Muslims, and in the north, it's mainly Muslim with some Christians. Some people think that there's not a church in northern Nigeria, that it's all Muslims, but it isn't. There's a very thriving church in northern Nigeria, and they're not hiding away despite incredible persecution. What I love is driving through the streets of northern Nigeria and seeing the Christian businesses. They really, and you, how do you know they're Christian businesses? Because they're called things like, my favorite one was Christ the King Frozen Fish, which I thought was a wonderful. And then I went past the Holy Trinity, you like that? Because it's here, yeah, Holy Trinity Car Wash, Emmanuel Bakery. And fantastic. You know, these people are not hiding away. They're not frightened of proclaiming Christ in northern Nigeria. And one of the places, and I took my son with me, and my son is 17 years old. He's just about to finish school. I hope he's revising for his A-levels at the moment, anyway. But he came with me. He always wanted to come on a trip with me. His mother wasn't too keen on him coming to northern Nigeria with me, but he was very keen. And one of the places we went together was a village in southern Kaduna. And it's a village that, now southern Kaduna is suffering from regular attacks from a group called the Fulani Herdsmen or the Fulani Militia. Now, these are a group that Fulani herdsmen have been roaming for hundreds of years, have been roaming northern Nigeria, or all over Nigeria, actually, and they take their cattle on onto anybody's land, and they and let them graze on other people's land, and usually the people just shoo them away and off they go, and then they find somewhere else. But over in recent years, suddenly these Fulani have become armed with the most sophisticated weapons. And instead of the Christian farmers being able to come out and just tell them to go away, when they do that, they just kill them. As simple as that. And so there've been thousands of Christians in the villages, not only Christians, but mainly Christians in the villages in the central belt there, that have been killed by the Fulani herdsmen or Fulani militia. They're now supposed to be the fourth most deadly terror group in the world. And the village that we visited was a village called Asso in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you know, you get to it on very, very narrow mud roads. And when we got there, they told us that last Easter, that's Easter 2017, the Fulani came into their church while they were celebrating Easter and killed 12 of them. This is a small village, and there are a number of villages around there, a very small village, killed 12 of them. And since that time, they've every time they've gone out into their land to farm, they're being killed. And they killed another 10. In fact, two were killed just 2 weeks ago, two more. But we were there in October. And one of the things that while we were there, they brought in a young boy who was my son's age. And they brought in this boy. And the first thing we noticed was the incredible smell when he came in. The reason was he had got a bullet in his leg that had been there for 3 months. And there was an open wound, and he was about to lose his leg. The good news is, rushing forward, is that the leg has been saved. But why? What had happened to him? Another girl came in, a 15-year-old girl with a bullet in her arm. That wasn't, fortunately, that wasn't an open wound. And so what had happened? The fact was that there is no hospital facilities. There is nowhere for these people to go. And so they have to carry, many of them die simply because they can't reach medical facilities. So, you know, and one thing that my son said to me, Daddy said it should be compulsory for every British Christian to come and visit this place. So I said, why do you think that is? And he said, because even though they're dying, they can't farm their land, they haven't got any food. He said, they've got joy in their hearts, and they had. And I can tell you this, in all of the years that I've been doing this and meeting Christians from all around the world, I've never met a miserable, persecuted Christian. I've met a few miserable Christians, but not, certainly not in Richmond. I've got to finish because my time's almost up, and I'm really sorry. I've got five. That's, I'm pleased about that because I was going to take five anyway. You know, this kind of stuff is happening all around. They're happening to our brothers and sisters. But it's also happening to other faiths too. And I should say, by the by, that we in CSW, we speak up for people of all faiths who are persecuted. We're speaking up at the moment for the Rohingya and other people like that. Because it's really important, you know, as Christians, that we speak out against all injustice, not that we just speak out for our own people, that we speak out against all injustice. And so we do that. I want to finish by saying we've just recently, our latest report that we brought out is called Faith and a Future. And you can get it on our website. I haven't brought any copies with me. They're pretty thick. But Faith and a Future looks at how children and young people are affected, from religious minorities, are affected. So, for example, in Pakistan, there are Christians and Hindus in Pakistan find that in school, in education, that they are outcasts. The textbooks in Pakistan incite hatred against Christians and other religious minorities. Unless you are a Sunni Muslim, then you're not accepted. I was speaking to a young man from Pakistan just 2 or 3 weeks ago, who told me that from the age of 3 or 4, when he started going to school, that he wasn't allowed to sit with any of the other children. He was the only Christian in the school. Wasn't allowed to sit with any other children at lunchtime. He couldn't eat at the same table. He couldn't drink from, there was a communal cup where they used to drink water from. He wasn't allowed to do that. As he grew up through school, he could never reach, even though he is academically very gifted, he could never get an A grade or even a B grade, even though his work was to that standard, simply because he was a Christian. And they told him constantly, both the teachers and the other children told him he could never do anything except be a sewer cleaner. That was all Christians were fit for in that country. And as I say, the very textbooks are even inciting that hatred. I brought with me today at the back there a petition that we are sending to Foreign Secretary and also the Minister for DFID, asking them, and we'd love it if you could sign it, please, asking them to ensure that British aid money does not go to fund those kind of textbooks, to try and get the narrative changed in that textbook. So please, if you do nothing else today, please sign that petition on your way out that will help us in the work we do. There are, you know, when you listen to this kind of thing, when you listen to these kind of stories, people always say to me, I never knew this was happening. What can I do? Well, there are three very, very quick things, four things you can do. All begin with P. The first thing is you can pray. Prayer changes things. Do you believe that? Sorry? Oh, right, okay. Yes, prayer changes things, and so please pray for these situations. And out the back there, I've got a prayer diary. So please take that for the next month. You can see next 3 months. You can see how to pray. Protest. You can protest by signing that petition. And there are other things. If you sign up to receive our regular prayer email, we'll ask you from time to time to send emails online that were already provided for you that you can protest to your member of parliament. It really does make a difference. The third thing you can do is provide. And one of the ways you can provide financially for people like us, but I haven't come to ask money, you'll be pleased to know. But you can also provide by writing letters and cards of encouragement to people who are in prison and to the families of those that are suffering. And out the back there again, I've got an address book. It's the CSW address book. It's called Connect and Encourage. And, you know, when you write letters and cards, it really, again, makes such a difference. If I had more time, I could tell you some amazing stories of a difference it makes when people... And it's so simple, is it not, to just sit down and write a postcard? You know, it takes 5 minutes, but it's something you can do. Pray, protest, provide. The fourth thing, as I finish, is proclaim. Please tell other people what is going on in the world today. Please tell them some of the things. And I've had no time really to tell you. I could be here all day and all week telling you other places and other stories about this situation. Please tell others so that they might pray, protest, and provide too. Thank you so much, and God bless you.